Conversations with Friends is a new series.
A series within a series.
Creative conversations between writer friends.
We were blown away by the calibre of the pitches we received from established, mid-career, debut and emerging writers.
From those writing poetry, fiction, non-fiction, plays, newsletters and PhDs.
Conversations to get you through these strange COVID days and beyond.
Sit back, stay home and enjoy. Emily Collier lives in Melbourne's West, where she writes poetry, plays, and prose. Her writing has appeared most recently in Australian Poetry Journal, Plumwood Mountain, Cordite, and The Lifted Brow. Her poetry manuscript, Womanish, received a 2020 Varuna Publication Introduction Fellowship with Geramondo Publishing. Award-winning plays include Contest, Dream Home, and The Good Girl. In 2020, she is starting a PhD in creative writing at RMIT.
Imbi Nimi is a writer of long and short fiction. Her novel, The Spill, won the 2019 Penguin Literary Prize and will be published by Penguin Random House Australia in June 2020. She was the recipient of the 2019 Henry Handel Richardson Fellowship for Excellence in Short Story Writing at Varuna. She lives in the west of Melbourne with her partner, kids, and largely indifferent pets. Catherine, I love this conversation so much. The game. It's brilliant.
It's so good. It is such a lovely conversation. So much so you messaged me yesterday and was like, it's so good.
It's so good. And I just want to play the game forever. Maybe we should do that the next time we chat. Also,
we need to push each other to the point of the pineapple card, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Ask more probing questions.
Yes. Yeah. Everyone's always pushing for the pineapple card, really, aren't they? The other thing we should do, obviously, is get a tattoo.
Have you got any tattoos?
I do not, and I'm one of the very few people I know who doesn't have any. Neither Adam or I have one, and I really want to get one. And I was going to get a stingray because I was going to get my middle grade, you know, stingray girl book published. But that's just on the side burner for the moment. So, you know, maybe we should get a first-time podcast tattoo.
I actually had a tattoo and I've had it removed.
Are you serious?
Which is a more painful and prolonged process than the initial one.
Goodness. What was your tattoo of? Where was it?
Tiny card.
Oh my goodness. You know that now I will work my whole life to find out that story.
It has been, it's vanished. You won't be able to find it.
That is so cool.
Unless I tell you.
Oh, that is great. Okay. And now I'm completely distracted by thoughts of your disappeared tattoo and why. What did you like best other than the card game about, and the pineapple card, about this conversation?
I feel like I always say friendship, but this one's a really, really lovely friendship.
Yeah.
The other thing, though, is just that idea of one day being so permanently or so committed to writing that you are willing to have a tattoo. You are so permanently committed. Yeah. You're never not going to write.
Yeah.
It'll be part of your life forever. Can't imagine it any other way. And then, you know, not so long later, you resign yourself to never doing it again.
Yeah. There's some great stories. I love the way that these two tell stories. I loved that just funnily Imbi reiterated exactly what Siobhan said in last week's conversation about the right person seeing your manuscript at exactly the right time and that's all you need. And I think there's something very calming about knowing that it's only one person that needs to see it. And I loved that was reiterated from last week's convo too.
It's also that also takes the pressure off you too, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Like, you can just do your work. That's all you can do, your best work.
Exactly.
Hey, do you have it? Have you ever had a submission spreadsheet?
No, I haven't. I think I like starting spreadsheets sometimes, but I'm not a completer.
Yeah.
I have a lot of half-started, you know, lists and spreadsheets and things like that.
I
like the idea of it.
No, I like the idea of it too, and I think it's really useful for listeners to pick up on that strategy, most particularly having a plan B. Like when the first rejection comes back, what are you going to do with it next? Although I think it's hilarious.
A plan B I think Bede refers to it as.
I was really interested in hearing Emily's answer to Imbi's question about how she keeps all her fingers in the different pies. I really loved that part and the idea that Emily talks about different ideas serving different forms. I thought that's nice and something important, maybe for people at the moment who are kind of thinking about lots of different projects, trying to get a lot of different projects up off the ground at the same time. I liked that.
I liked Emily's, she said something about her poetry collection was a collection of poems that wanted to live together. I love that.
That's really nice. That's really nice. It was absolutely delightful that Imbi did a shout out to my Creative Resilience program as well. And we'll put a link in the show notes because that is happening really soon, May 10th or 9th, one of those dates. We'll put it in on Writers Vic, which you can go to at the moment because Writers Vic has got, like everyone else, everything online and a bunch of great programs which you can do.
And that's it. Let's get on with it.
Let's get on with it. Please share to these episodes. It's great for the authors who are speaking to get your feedback. And it's just one little thing we can all do to help support these writers. So share, like, tell your mates.
Well, hello, Emily Collier.
Hello, Imbi Nimi.
Here we are. We are about to record. Well, we are recording our podcast for the Conversation with Friends series. And we're going to do a slightly different format. We're going to play a card game.
It's very exciting.
It's super exciting. Mm. The card game is called Conversation with Friends, the card game.
Just to be clear about what it is, yes.
Yes, we do like to be clear. I'm going to explain the rules. We each have 10 conversation cards and we get to play each card one at a time, and the card acts as a prompt for the other person. And you can, if you don't understand the card, you can ask for more information.
That's good to know. Thank you.
Or if the card is a trigger for some personal trauma or something that you don't want to divulge to the larger public, you can use the safety word pineapple.
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 Yes, great.
I should add here that we did toy with the idea of calling the whole game pineapple, but that would sort of suggest that the aim of the game was to elicit a pineapple response, which is not what we really want to do here. I don't really want to trigger you as much.
No. I think that probably won't happen, but you never know. You just never know. So it's always good to have that safe word as a, yes. as a safety catch. Yes.
Yes. All right. So there we go. Now, and I should add too that there is no point system. We're all winners, including the people who are listening to the game.
What? I thought I was going to win or lose. Okay. All right.
Settle down, Collier. Okay. All right. So I'm going to play the first card. I'm looking at my cards, feeling a little bit anxious. I'm going to play this one. And it says the word ampersand. Speak, Collier, speak.
Wow. You've started with a doozy. So ampersand has a very special meaning for Imbi and I. We met working at a small arts organisation a number of years ago and discovered we were both writers, and we formed a very close bond, both as friends and also as writing peers. And I believe it was around October 2016. Is that right, Imbi?
Correct.
Yeah, we made this pact that within 12 months from that date, we would both get an ampersand tattoo if we achieved a particular writing goal that we had in mind, whether that was to get something published or accepted into something, a program. And I think Imbi came up with the idea of the ampersand as a symbol, which is just such a beautiful, elegant, poetic symbol. And I was like, yeah, that's a great idea. So we made that pact.
You agreed to the pact so easily.
I'm very easy when it comes to, you know, marking my body.
You're very biddable. Yes.
Yeah. And then, as they say in the classics, life happened. We had a number of personal things unfold in our lives, and you may talk about yours if you like. And being mine certainly was that I got a diagnosis of breast cancer, which kind of wrote me off for about the next, you know, 6 to 12 months in terms of focus on writing, as I was busy having treatment. And it was a very disorienting time, but, you know, we kept in touch and we kept our commitment to being friends and being writers. And again, I hope I've got the dates right here, and be in in about August, September 2018, I think you suggested let's get our ampersand tattoos anyway and get them as a commitment to the writing we have been doing and the writing we will always do, as opposed to a symbol of a particular goal that was achieved.
I think that was my very good idea.
So off we trotted to the Victoria Market Tattoo Parlour in North Melbourne.
Right. And we've got our tattoos.
Got an ampersand tattoo on our inside wrist of our right hand, which we wear to this day.
We do wear it to this day. I can't get rid of it. I've looked into laser removal. You have the story correct. I think in just to add a little bit of detail, in that journey towards that decision to just get the tattoos for as a commitment to writing, as opposed to celebrate an achievement, you know, you drifted away from writing for a bit, and that really alarmed me at the time, although I tried to understand you. I remember you saying, I'm not sure I will come back to writing. And I was like, what? Like, how can we be friends if you're not writing? I ended up blogging about it, and I felt that a writer who's not writing is like living half a life. And So you did come back to writing slowly. You started to write about your treatment, and then you started to write other things. And it was like this, watching this beautiful snowball gathering momentum, coming down a mountain directly for me. I just remember being so relieved you'd come back. And I think that was, and I'd also had some disappointments. When we made the pact, I felt so close. I was just around the corner from getting that publishing deal. And I think I'd written a whole other manuscript since. And I realized, maybe getting published is not the goal. Maybe the goal is just to write and to love that space. And so therefore, ampersand.
Ampersand.
Okay, I'm cutting that one off. You could play the next card.
All right. Just rifling through my little...
you don't have to play all the cards, by the way. I should have added that, because we probably will run out of time. You and I could talk for hours and hours.
Yeah, we could. Okay, so the first card I am going to play is accountability.
Ah, accountability. I guess this card refers to the weekly emails we sent each other.
It might.
We send each other, I should say. I hope we're going to continue to send them to each other after this. And that was an idea that I got from Kate Mildenhall, who's the host of the Mother podcast, of this podcast series.
Thanks, Kate.
First time. Thank you, Kate. That was a really great workshop I did through Writers Victoria called the Post-Publication Hustle. And as someone who was still pre-publication, was a bit forward of me to go to that workshop, but Kate had me nonetheless. And I got lots of great ideas from that. And one of them was this weekly accountability email. And I think it's particularly important that I did it with you, because you and I had that touchstone of working together and having those sort of, twice, sometimes thrice weekly conversations where we sort of, touch base about what we're working on, what we were, the little wins we'd had, the disappointments we'd had. And then I had, jumped ship and gone. And
yeah, you left me. You abandoned
me. I left you.
Yeah.
I left you in that cold office and went to a place where there was heating and a proper scanner.
You're only human after all. Yes.
Yeah. So the accountability email became even more important to just continue that friendship that we had built, and sort of talk about what we had done in the past week, what we plan to do in the week ahead, what our potential barriers were or sort of roadblocks, and what our workarounds were going to be. And I think it's a really important reflection, particularly in this lockdown situation where people do feel a bit cut adrift, and I have been feeling that way, and so I feel it keeps me honest. You're keeping me honest, Collier.
Well, somebody has to, let's face it. Yeah, you're a trickster at the best of times.
Do you find the emails useful, or do you go, oh God, here's another email from Nimi?
No, I'm pleased. I'm pleased when I, you know, we kind of we swap about who remembers to send it first on the Monday, and sometimes I'm like, yes, I got in first. But I love them. I feel there's like a connecting thread is how I look at it. It's like this sort of thing that kind of just gently loops me into the start of each week, and that sort of opportunity, and it doesn't take long, but just to reflect on the week past and then where you're at is really wonderful. And to do that, you know, with someone who you're sharing that kind of the sort of, I guess it's such a sort of multifaceted process or journey. Journey is a terrible word in some ways, but it is, of being a writer, and there's so many nuances and ups and downs and ins and outs, and it does also interweave with personal life. And I think that having that, as you say, that touchstone once a week is really, really valuable. And I mean, I guess as a side note, I'd highly recommend it to other writers. It's a beautiful thing to do.
Yeah. Yes. So do it, people. Also, if Kate's got another, I think it's Creative Mind or Creative. Sorry, Kate, I can't remember the name of the workshop coming up in May through Writers Victoria. I'm assuming it's going to be online, but I would recommend people look it up and do it. All right, that's enough plugging other people's stuff. Brings me to my next card that I'm going to play. In fact, I'm going to play two cards because they're kind of related. I know. This is my game. I make the rules.
Exploding my mind.
Okay, two cards. One is poetry, and the other one is Varuna.
Ha! Gosh, I can't think of why you've put those two cards together. That's a lovely double card to play. I mean, I'll respond in the immediate, which is to say I'm just found out this week and I'm very, very delighted to have received a publisher introduction program fellowship with Varuna to work on a poetry manuscript of mine called Womanish. And so that's the immediate kind of connection between poetry and Varuna, which has just lit up my world in an amazing way this last few days. And then to sort of just backpedal a bit through that, as Imbi was saying, during that kind of time when I was sort of deeply ensconced in treatment for cancer, I did have this sort of strange step away from writing, and I kind of felt like I didn't have the energy or the creative brain space for writing, and it was a little bit scary, but it was also like, oh well, maybe that's just it for me now. And one of the things that was really important as I started to find my way back was poetry. And I've written poetry for a long time, as well as kind of playwriting being my main sort of thing, but I sort of came back to it with a really renewed vigor probably about 18 months ago, and started applying myself very deeply to it, and did a wonderful online workshop actually with Andy Jackson, which was completely wonderful. And just started to build up very slowly a collection of poems I was writing currently, as well as past ones that all seem to sort of want to live together. So it's been a really important focus for me for the last as I said, 18 months or so, and it's very lovely to have it acknowledged in this way. Thanks for
absolutely
asking.
Well, in our accountability emails, and look, you can just shout pineapple if I'm starting to say too much, but you know, I mean, we both wax and wane with our confidence in our writing, and often you'll be feeling sort of a little tender with the poetry because you feel like, I don't know, having come back to it, I don't know, do you feel like you have to earn your stripes again as a poet, having run off to join the theatre for a while?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I felt like I love poetry, I love reading it, I love writing it. I've always felt that it wasn't as strong a suit for me as playwriting. Mm. I guess I kind of feel like I've flexed my playwriting muscles in a much more kind of consistent and overt way over many, many years. So poetry's always been there as something that I love, but have felt maybe not as confident in. So yes, it's sort of slowly building up that confidence in my perspective as a poet, and how I'm kind of framing that as part of my writing suite of the various things that I do. Yeah. So yes, I think tender is a really nice word for how to describe it. It's sort of very important to me in a kind of, in a way, in a personal kind of deep way. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's a wonderful acknowledgement of your work. I think the point with the accountability emails is that you would be feeling tender, but then at the same time acknowledging that you'd actually had a few wins as well. It's sort of
That's right, funny, yeah.
How as writers that we only see the disappointments. The disappointments somehow kind of overshadow the wins.
Mm.
I don't know. I mean, we have to. It's another good thing about that email is that, you know, we put it down in writing, and then you've got someone else going, hang on.
Hmm.
Hang on, you know, Collier, things you're doing pretty well. So,
yeah.
All right, your turn.
Okay. I'm going to throw this one at you. I hope it has some resonance, but I feel like...
Pineapple.
Okay, I'll move on to the next one.
No, go on.
Okay, it's time.
Time. Oh, that's interesting because I immediately think of about 5 different answers. Maybe right. Just 2, but I guess time for me is about, you know, actual time that I managed to find to write in a very busy life. People who don't know me, I've got 5 teenagers in my life, a blended family, 3 boys, 2 girls, very busy household, and I work a 0.7 job. Yeah, I probably put 100% into that 0.7 job, and then trying to kind of mark out that time to write, as well as manage the household and stuff. There's a bit of guilt being the part-time worker. My partner's a full-time worker, so I feel like I need to take on a lot of the domestic duties, and I don't often give myself permission to write, which, you know, is an ongoing issue. And like, my partner gives me permission to write. Don't get me wrong. It's I'm the problem. I mean, that's usually the case, isn't it? Nimi's the problem. But
that's a bit harsh. I think problem's a strong word.
Okay, well, it's kind. I think I'm being kind.
Yeah.
And then time too. I think, you know, when I started, I remember the first paragraph I wrote of my first manuscript and just thinking, yeah, I'm on my way. Mm. And that was 2013. I had been blogging for many years before that, and short stories, and I'd written a terrible novella in my early 20s, which I think is a rite of passage for all writers, a terrible novella. And I it's taken me, you know, 7 years to kind of to get there. And I kind of knew it would take a while, but I didn't know it would take quite that long, and I know for other people it takes even longer. And I think it comes back to ampersand again, which is, you know, it's important, I think, to have goals and things that you want to achieve with your writing, places you want it to be published or seen or read or etc. But there's so much that you don't have control over. So I guess my relationship then, if I could go back and say to that person who was writing that first paragraph in 2013, it would be like, yeah, I don't know, don't set these goals, but don't set the goals with some kind of time limit.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know, time is, I don't know what I'm trying to say here. You finish my sentence. Go on.
Well, I mean, the reason I thought of time for you was that, but and also like the extraordinary way that you make the most of time, as you were just saying, you have this very, very full life with, you know, a lot of wonderful things in it, but a lot of demands on your time. And I mean, I'm just astonished. I mean, I believe you've written in the time that I've known you, which was not quite that 7 years, maybe sort of 5 of those years, you've written 4 whole manuscripts. Is that right?
I love that you think it's 4. I've written 3 and I've
really?
Got
it's the fourth one. We've chatted about a bit and it's in your imagination, but not.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, what was the line? I did clamoring at the gates of my mind. That one is clamoring to be written.
Yeah. Still, I mean, that's absolutely incredible given, as you say, mostly you're writing in pockets of, you know, half an hour here, an hour there at the start, and the discipline that takes. But for me, knowing you, it's always felt like a discipline with a lot of love in it. So it's not this kind of punishing discipline. Oh, I've got to get back to the, you know, I mean, sometimes there is that frustration of, oh, I wish I could get back to it, but it always feels like in among all the things that you do, making the time for that writing and for your writing world and your imaginative world is also like a wonderful sort of is a wonderful sort of part of who you are and also how you shape your life. And I've just loved that about you and how your writing has developed. Yeah, it's incredible.
I appreciate it. I think it comes, the discipline and the ability to write in very short bursts comes from my blogging days, my years of blogging, where, you know, I always describe it as, you know, writing with small children dangling off me like Christmas baubles, but that was what it was like. And so
and now they're teenagers, that's quite heavy. It'd have five of them. It's like, oh,
God, what a burden. Yeah, yeah. But yes, I developed that muscle and I use that muscle. So yes, I probably, when I talk about giving myself permission, you know, when I do manage to give myself permission, I go in and I go hard.
Yeah, yeah.
That's enough said about that, I think.
Okay.
Next card. It's my turn. I'm going to play this one. It's difference.
Wow.
You can ask for more context because I think on the back of the card there's like more text. Yeah.
Well, okay, I'll respond with one little thing, but then I'd be really curious to know if there was something else you were interested in talking about. My immediate response to the word difference for myself was that I write across a lot of different forms.
Yes.
And so I, as I said before, I playwriting's probably my primary form or has been, but, you know, very much poetry as well. I also write fiction, and I've written short fiction and a couple of very much unpublished novels. I also write essays and opinion pieces and articles and things. And then I guess I use my writing to, sometimes I work with others as a dramaturg or, you know, as a kind of a text consultant or work on other projects. So, and I also do copywriting, which is what I used to do, freelance copywriting for a living. And then I sort of segued into a part-time job at an arts organisation. Shout out to Chambermaid as a communications manager.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I guess it's like feeling like I have all these many, many, let's mix some metaphors here, prongs to my bow. Strings to my pond.
I'm not sure about having prongs on a bow. That's going to hurt.
Yeah, yeah, it's
probably not the person like you. It's going to hurt you, not the person you're aiming
interesting.
At.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think your the diversity, I mean, diversity probably would have been a better word for my card. Whoever made this game just did a really bad job. But, yes, you spread yourself across a lot of different forms and it's just so much. So that's always been the most impressive thing for me about you is how much you do and how many fingers you have in how many pies. You have a lot of fingers and a lot of pies. And that it comes back to the accountability emails. One of the reasons I insisted that you do it with me is because I just needed to keep tabs on you, Collier. You just otherwise it was these things coming like, what? You were doing what? You know, you're incredibly prolific and everything you do you do in such a considered kind of way that I just can't imagine doing all those things with all that consideration. Like, I'd be exhausted. It's amazing you function as a human being.
Yes, I have several clones of myself, so I don't know which one you're talking to now, but she's the one who believes she is real. So yeah, I mean, it is, I guess, I've reflected about this quite a bit over the years as to whether it's, I have inverted commas here, good or bad. I mean, I think it's just me, it's partly my personality and it's partly just the way you develop a writing practice over many years because you need to do lots of different things to sustain it. But I think it just is also, I have interests that go to a lot of different areas and different ideas seem to serve different forms better. And I have definitely thought, if I just hammered hard at one for many, many years, maybe I would have achieved some sort of higher, loftier success in that, whatever that might look like. But there's also something really rich about the many pies, which I actually love. And the many communities and intersecting communities that enables me to be part of, which I value heaps, like as much as the actual writing is being connected in all those different ways. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'll admit now, I think you've given a much better answer to the one that I was trying to elicit because I was thinking more about the difference between you and me, because it all comes back to me, really. It's, but no. But no, just that we do write in very different forms.
Yes.
And yet, you know, we have this ongoing dialogue, conversation and appreciation of each other's works. I mean, you've yet to read any of my novels because I haven't let you. Just like not letting Collier near this one. No, you're an incredible support to all my short story writing, and also when I have to write pitches for things. You've got a great eye, and I always appreciate the bag of tools that you bring to my work, which are quite a different set from.
And so interesting. Yeah, thank you. Well, thank you. That's lovely to hear. But also, yeah, that is really interesting. And we had chatted about this a little bit, like you say, that difference. But I don't know, I guess we're both, yes, we sort of have a lot of difference in form, but I feel like we're both interested in that kind of very, in those questions around being human that sit at the heart of both of what we're exploring. Would you agree?
I would agree. I also want to add here that we're being really nice to each other.
Yeah, is that getting into sort of...
It's saccharine. Oh, my God.
Okay, let's throw in some...
Yeah.
Throw in some shade.
Okay, next card has to be a pineapple card. I swear to God, Collier.
Oh, no.
No, it's fine.
It can't be, because my next card is just one word, as they all have been, but this word is spill.
Ah, spill. The spill. Yes, that would be the title of my forthcoming novel with Penguin Random House Australia. I know.
What a coincidence.
Who knew? No, it's due to be, its publication date, 2nd of June. It won the Penguin Literary Prize last year, much to my surprise. I'm still pinching myself. You know, so many times, you know, I throw my manuscripts at everything that moves, and it's always someone else, and that's fine. You get used to that and you kind of pick yourself up, you have your little pity party. I think I had the vodka on chill for my penguin related pity party, and then it was me, and it's I'm just pinching myself continually, like it's actually happened. I mean, it's funny. Like people say, oh, you know, what was it like to win the prize? And I was like, great, it's fantastic. But also me and my, submission spreadsheet, I don't know if I've ever shown it to you, but I would always have a plan B to, Z for what I was going to do with the manuscript next. So
can I just interrupt here briefly? Mm. Just here's my bit of shade. Spreadsheet was literally the next card I was going to play. So you've just blown my clever little offer there. But anyway, carry on.
My spreadsheet where I managed all of my submissions. Yes, I do love a spreadsheet. Mm. When I won, I was like, well, hang on. Well, what do we do now? I had all my plans ready because I wrote a blog post about it, like pretty much any profound thought I have ever had, I've written a blog post about it. And the fact that I've only written about 4 blog posts in the last 3 years speaks volumes about how many profound thoughts I've had. But I did write one which was about my manuscript being a little boat, which, every time I came back to shore, I just push it out again. And, sometimes I'd be glad to see it. And sometimes I'd be like, oh, no, not you again. And so I had all these, I was ready to push it back out. And then hang on, no, this one's sticking. It's actually... I was expecting it to come back to me and have to push it out again, and it actually arrived somewhere. And now it's coming out, and what a time to be coming out, though.
So exciting, and then so like so many writers this year, it's going to be that strange kind of not ideal launch moment. But it will still be a launch moment, and it will carry on, and we will celebrate. I guess because, we mentioned before, I thought it was 4, but 3 definitely whole manuscripts. And I think it's interesting, Imbi, that, you had written 2 other whole novel manuscripts, and one of which was shortlisted for the VPLAs, yes?
It was on the judges' commended list.
Judges' commended list. Yes. Well, that's very good.
Thank you.
And then, so there was that one, then you'd written another one, and then the spill. So I guess it, for me, it really speaks to that question around, firstly, just that carrying on and the accountability and the ampersand and just keeping on doing, and also the sort of the uncontrollability for all of us as writers about which things kind of take hold in the world and which don't, because you've got these other two beautiful manuscripts that may or may not get published, but they're there sort of waiting, but this is the one that kind of took the imagination and sort of connected in the right way at this time.
It landed on the right desk at the right time. Yeah. I mean, I remember one of the judges, I was very lucky, not everyone gets to meet the judges who selected their manuscript, and one of the judges was a lovely young man, Dr. Tim Jarvis, who works at Fuller's down in Hobart. Shout out Fuller's, and actually for all independent booksellers at this time. He was talking to me about the book, and I was saying to him, I wouldn't have thought you were my target reader. And he had read it at a time that his, he was having things with his own family, and it just arrived when it was at a moment that it resounded with him. And I thought, oh, that's luck. That's luck. It landed on his desk at the right moment. And that's not always the case. Sometimes it's got nothing to do with the quality of the writing. It's about landing on the right desk at the right moment.
Mm. And it's encouraging, I guess, to remember that. Exactly, for that reason, that it's sometimes timing is absolutely key, and that's why you have to keep doing it, because the timing, you can't control the timing, and it might not be the timing you thought, but it will still possibly happen.
Yes, okay, that's enough about the spill, but I should add here that it is available for pre-order now.
And I can't wait to read it. Like, I've heard you read the first chapter on that great YouTube initiative that's been happening.
Read Tasmania.
Yeah, but I just can't wait to read the damn thing.
Oh, wait, Collier. Be patient. It's coming. Okay. It's coming. All right, next card. All right, because we are running out of time.
Okay.
So I think we've got time to play one more card each before I declare us all the winners. I don't know which one. I'm desperate. Okay, well, I'm going to tell you one card that I would play, but it's early days. So I was going to play PhD card and just sort of that life of the mind that you're, lucky to have at this time. Yes. This lockdown time. But actually, something we haven't spoken about for a long time. It's just your abandoned novels. So I've just got this card is novel. God. Novel.
Oh, yeah.
You can say pineapple.
No, it's okay. I just don't know if I have anything very interesting to say about them, except that they're there, they exist. And like many... I mean, I'm a big believer in that whole sort of compost theory of writing, is that everything feeds it, and everything ends up kind of being part of your fodder, whether it comes to fruition as a public or a published work or not. And I have spent hours and hours and weeks and months and years really working hard at one novel in particular, but at a couple of others that I had a good crack at. And they didn't find their place in the world, and maybe they were just, I do that thing where I look at them as learning, kind of almost like apprenticeships for myself, to learn more about my own writing. And was I trying too hard to be a certain kind of writer when I was writing those, that wasn't actually coming as naturally to me as maybe I'm finding a bit more now with poetic forms. So I feel, I kind of feel a sort of a stubborn proudness about the fact that they exist, and they'll never be published because they're just not, right. They're just not good enough. But there's something important about the fact that they exist, and that I wrangled them into the world, and that I tried so hard. And I feel like some of that learning then just sort of filters down.
They're like the children in the attic, aren't they?
Yeah, and they've stopped calling out now, so I think I might have nearly starved them to death. So that's
we should add here that we don't condone starving children. No,
that was a very crass analogy, and I would never do that.
That's right. But, I know that, and I can vouch for you, and I'm willing to go to court and say so.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. That's it. Yeah, it's just I I remember with my first manuscript, I really, a publisher asked me, oh, do you have something else? And I was like, no, this is it. I'm going to, you know, I'm probably going to be buried with this printout, you know, clutched to my chest. But then, you know, there is a point where I did let it go, and I may go back to it. Certainly my agent has some ideas on how to actually make it, you know, a seaworthy vessel. But awesome. It was interesting when I finally didn't manage to let it go, and I'm like, oh, so that explains all those people who have those sort of manuscripts in their attics stuck in a way. It's that letting go is, and it shows wisdom, Collier.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Knowing when to let go.
That is true. That is, you can really work at something very, very hard. And then there's the point at which you think, oh, I'm flogging this now. And it's turned into a punishing thing rather than a useful thing. So,
That's right. Okay. Last card.
Okay. Ooh. This is technically two words, but it's one idea.
I knew you would. Yeah.
I just want to break the rules.
Okay. Well, I played two cards before, so I'm going to allow. Yeah. I will allow it.
Okay. So as we know, I was going to play spreadsheet, but you already talked about that. So I just want to finish with this one because I think it really speaks to me about another thing that I really do love about you, which is the way you foster community and connection. So anyway, the actual word is story time. So I'm going to let you respond to that as you see fit.
Well, it's interesting. One of my cards that I haven't played was brunch.
Aha.
Which actually is a word we're not allowed to use in my household because one of my children takes grave exception to the concept of brunch. Oh. He feels that it's cheating him out of a meal by combining breakfast and lunch. Oh, anyway, that always makes me laugh. I think that community, the story time was something that Jane Rawson, I'd like to say it was my idea, but it was definitely Jane's idea. She has all the best ideas.
I thought it was you two together.
Well, she came to me and said, what do you think? Okay. And I said, I think that's a good idea. And I think that gives me, 10% claim on the idea?
50, definitely 50.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Because if you'd said no, she would have gone, okay, then, and she wouldn't have pursued it.
Yeah. Well, she might have gone and asked someone else. But, yes, this idea that we would come together every couple of months, bunch of adults sitting around on a Sunday afternoon and read short stories aloud to each other. And it was not our own work. It's not a writing group. It was definitely a reading and listening group. But that sort of like story time for adults was the full name of the experience. And I think we ended up featuring in a Radio National thing where you were heavily featured because you've got the Radio National voice.
Yes, that's right. Which is not that voice.
Who was that? I think for me, actually, story time really brought me back to the short story. And actually, it was through story time that I started to think more about short stories and actually came to write short stories again. And so I have a lot to thank that group for, not just meeting sort of, you know, the other, you know, broadening my community or that circle with the people that are part of that group. Just sort of an appreciation for the form of short stories.
Yeah, and it's such a pleasurable thing, isn't it, to just that thing of you know, being read to. And again, I know that's happening maybe a little bit more now in lockdown, that looking for pleasures of that nature, and to be able to just sit in a room with other people, or as we're doing it now, virtually with other people, and have them read, and also read something that usually we'd bring something that we love, or we might bring something that we were kind of intrigued by, or, you know, found a kind of an interesting, if somewhat difficult piece, and just to sort of share that. And what I also liked about the group is that it didn't become overly analytical. Like, we would chat a little bit about the story afterwards, but it wasn't like kind of a book group in terms of that really pulling it apart. It was more just that pleasure of reading and being in other people's worlds and feeling the many, many ways that a short story can be wrought. And the many, many different styles and tastes. And it was just, it's such a lovely thing to do.
When combined with lovely snacks and wine.
Indeed. I think we always did pretty well on the snack front.
Sometimes too many snacks. Yes. Yeah, so, story time. May it happen again soon. Maybe we should do a Zoom version I don't know. Everyone's a bit zoomed out, aren't they?
Yeah, man.
Zoom. In all of our careful planning of this podcast recording, we never talked about how to end it.
No.
I feel like, you know, we could have given it a bit of thought, maybe ended with a song.
Well, feel free.
No. But I just want to say it's been such a delight, as always, to talk with you. And
it was surprisingly easy. I thought there'd be more awkward pauses, but we had plenty to say.
Oh, we have lots to say. Not all of it, like, interesting, but certainly that I'm talking for myself.
Well
there,
aware of that, yes.
Yes, so thank you. And thanks to Kate and Catherine for this opportunity to share our conversation with a broader audience other than just our good selves. And, everybody out there, stay safe, stay home if you can, and we'll see you out in the world hopefully soon.
Indeed.
Right. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. The First Time Podcast is produced by Phoebe 80 and supported by Writers Victoria, the ACT Writers Centre, and our wonderful patrons.